I'll just read very quickly. I'm just going to read them very quickly out to you, and I'll sort of do 10% of this. And this is Tabi'in, first of all. Ali ibn al-Imam al-Qanit had 500 trees, and he used to go and pray 2 rakats daily at each of his trees. Mujahid, a very famous Tabi you would have heard of, who has transmitted the Tafsir of Ibn Abbas, radiallahu anhu, used to complete the Quran every day. But again, maybe he's a mufassir, right? But he used to complete the reading of the Quran every day. Umair ibn Hani used to pray 1,000 nafl salah every day and used to make tasbih 100,000 times a day. And this is mentioned in the Sunan of Tirmidhi. Al-Aswad, rahimahullah ta'ala, used to say about himself that he prayed 700 rakats every day. The son of Aswad, Al-Imam ibn al-Imam, Abdul Rahman ibn al-Aswad, was once seen praying 65 rakats before Jummah. Sayyid ibn al-Musayyib, one of the most greatest tabi'in and one of the most, many of the ahadith go through him, right? Used to pray, the same thing, used to pray Fajr with the same wudu that he prayed Isha, and he used to fast every day, right? Khair Isitana, we've got, I will show you another 13 store events of tabi'in. Tabi'i tabi'in, right? Ibn al-Qasim narrated from Imam Malik's slave that Imam Malik prayed the dawn prayer with the same wudu that preceding Isha for 49 years. Right? Imam Abu Yusuf Rahimullah used to pray 200 rakats every day. Sahal al-Tustri used to fast every day and used to also be up all night in Salah. Ibn al-Subki, Tajuddin Ibn al-Subki, was a very famous Shafi fiqh. Right, said Imam Shafi and Imam Bukhari used to recite the Quran every day. Imam Shafi and Imam Bukhari used to recite the Quran every day, and they used to recite it twice a day in Ramadan. Certainly, Tajuddin ibn Subki knew the hadith, and certainly Imam Bukhari knew the hadith, right? So let's say Imam Bukhari did it, he knew the hadith and did it. Let's say Imam Bukhari didn't do it, but Tajuddin, it's a wrong attribution, but Tajin ibn Subki knew the hadith, he would have come, he would have said something about it, right? Imam Ahmad rahimahullah, is also Tabi'i Tabi'in, used to recite the entire Quran daily.
All of these narrations which you are reading right now, do they have a complete chain?
They're all these books, Ibn Hajar's Isaba, Imam al-Dhahabi's. They're the narrations of the lives of the Tabi'in and Tabi'i Tabi'in do not have chains. Those are hadith, right? No, they don't have chains. I have the references, but the references don't have a chain. For example, Ibn Hajar writes in his Al-Isaba, this event. He doesn't write in his Isaba that he heard this from so-and-so, who heard it from so-and-so, heard it from so-and-so, back to the Tabi'in. These ulama themselves. Your authenticity you give to them is their name. Ibn Hajar Asqalani, Imam al-Zahabi, Imam Jalaluddin al-Suyuti, Imam al-Nawawi. These are the same people whose hadith gradings you accept. These are the same people. So if you accept their hadith gradings, you need to think whether you accept their reports of the lives of those people who they graded. So this is what we're just trying to show you. This is why I called it, this whole series, Understanding the Islamic Scholarly Tradition. That's my job, is to present to you how the scholars understood things. Maki, somebody wants to accept it or leave it, is no problem. Somebody wants to say, if I leave the scholars' understanding and I just follow Bukhari and Muslim, that's your choice, right? But all my job is to make sure you never try to say that just following the hadith is the scholars' understanding. That's what I'm here to show you, right? And those who have studied know that these are 4 of the 5 or 6 the biggest names that exist. These are the biggest names in hadith and in biography and even in fiqh, many of them. Right? And this was their understanding. And this is their writings. Right? Ibn Jawzi al-Hanbali, another one, about Imam Ahmad bin Hanbali. He used to pray 300 nafl rakats a day. So in this there are dozens, there are many things over here. Right? And so we go back to this hadith now. Kullu muddatin bidatun, wa kullu bidatin dalalatun, wa kullu dalalatin yusiru ilan nar. Right? That every matter newly begun is a bidat, every bidat is a misguidance, and every misguidance takes you to Jahannam. So these two theoretical things. First over here, what can you use a hadith for? Now I first showed you that category of those things that are beyond the hadith. Right? most of the issues that you actually wrote me on. I've just showed you that Sahaba, Tabi'in, Tabi'i Tabi'in, even one or two examples even may have been of people beyond the Tabi'i Tabi'in towards the end, right? Did matters in Nafl Ibadat that were not in the Sunnah and were not understood by the mass of the Islamic scholarly tradition as being bid'at either, but there was this other category of being something that is permissible. Things that were not to be found in the Hadith at all. Now after doing that, what do you think is going to be the position of the scholarly tradition that if you even have a Zayf Hadith for that Amal, if they're willing to accept a whole range of new things and quantities and times and worships and du'as and dhikrs and numbers of salats, because that's all ihtimam. Ibn Hajar, if Muhammad did 300 a day, it means he picked an adab. He stayed to that adab. And he did that on a daily basis. Now, if they're all doing all of that with zero hadith to support them, what do you think that scholarly tradition is going to say about that amal that has a zayf hadith even to top it off to support it? This is where I'm leading you. Now you see. Right? But what happens is you work it backwards. You begin, hey, this is the practice, and oh, look, we got this hadith, and look, this hadith is zayf. And that's how our minds think. So, the Islamic tradition, even that which is established without any hadith is not bid'at. And popular misconception, that which is established through zayf hadith is bid'at. You see the difference? It's a massive difference. There's a gulf in the understanding of the scholars and the understanding of the popular speakers or masses. Well, not masses though. So you see the masses, for masses, nothing is bid'at, right? And for a certain group, everything is bid'at. Both things are, it's just too simplistic. And if anything, that was again the purpose of the whole series, is to show you that nothing can be that simplistic. It's not that simple.